KOL.
Bullseye on the afternoon. Matt Douglas in for Andy Bull Barts today. He's down in the capital of Ohio, Columbus, probably rooting on the Blue Jackets. I think we're going to make a hockey fan out of him yet. If he hasn't been, hopefully he's listening, because I feel like after this conversation, he will be. We've got Blue Jackets insider Jeff Svoboda, the pride of Southview, with us, Southview High School, that is, with us here on Bullseye on the afternoon. Jeff's up in Boston, unfortunately, not in Columbus, but will hopefully be making his way down very shortly, and hopefully a joyous occasion. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, although it's a little rainy here. It was beautiful here yesterday. Weather not cooperating, but it's good to be in one of the great sports cities in America, and unfortunately had to hear the song Dirty Water last night after a Boston win, and we're going to try to make sure that doesn't happen in game two, but good to be here.
Yeah, that's a bit unfortunate. I mean, maybe that kind of put a damper on the weather. Other than that, it sounds like everything sounds good. And now I think you're getting the remnants of what we've been going through here all day in Northeast Ohio. It seemed like it was never going to stop raining, but finally the sun has come out. So we're doing a little bit better here. You mentioned the game, obviously, last night, Jeff. Let's start right there by talking about that one. 3-2 game. Jackets losing overtime. It's their first loss of the playoffs. Is this serious? Should we be worried? Or do you think this was the team working through a little rust after the long layoff?
Oh, there was definitely rust involved. There's no doubt about it. If you watch the first, I was worried for the first 10 minutes. I think it was more for the first 30 minutes of that game, where they just could not get anything going. They looked like a team that had not played a competitive game in 9 days between games, 8 full days off. And you just can't keep that intensity level where you need to keep it over that span of time. You can, they did a simulated game in Nationwide Arena last week. They scrimmaged each other, and there was a lot of people involved. The 5,500 people came out and cheered them on and stuff like that. And, they played against each other, but you just can't simulate a playoff hockey game unless you're in it. And so I've seen this happen before. If you watch enough NHL hockey, if you got a team with a layoff, they're going to struggle that first, whatever it is, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. But you did see, if you watched the game, the Blue Jackets kind of got into their game as the day went on. They started to play a lot better as things went on. They took a 2-1 lead in the third period and then just couldn't finish it off. But I think if they'd won that game, it would have felt a little bit like stealing. Like they would have stuck out of there with one. Instead, they did not. But now they come back in game two. And as they said today, Pierre-Luc Dubois, their, big, good young centerman, said, we didn't expect to go 16-0 in the playoffs. And so, you're going to lose games. And it's all about how you respond to those lost games and how you come back and play. And so that's where the Blue Jackets are now. So, yeah, unfortunate to lose game one, but, you got a lot more kicks to the can here coming up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I thought I at least took from that slow start is Sergei Bobrovsky. I mean, outshot 14-4. The guy stood on his head, made some of the best saves I think we've seen him make maybe all year. You could throw that in there. But can we put a stop to the whole Bobrovsky doesn't show up for the playoffs thing now? Because I thought he was good last year against Washington. He kept them in that series when he had the opportunities, but he's been absolutely stunning through the first series and this one game, I think, at this point. Is it time to stop with the Bobrovsky can't play in the postseason yet?
I think it is. I think that narrative is overblown. I think, obviously, he has not played as well in the playoffs as he has in the regular season throughout his career. If you look at the numbers, it would be really hard to argue that. The reality is his numbers are not as good in the postseason. As they are in the regular season. And that's the reason why he's won 2 Vezina trophies as the best goaltender in the NHL previously, but it had not gotten out of the first round of the playoffs until this season. But at the same time, I think a lot of his struggles and a lot of the times in the past where he just, was giving up more goals, some of that was more about the team as well, where they just weren't playing as well in front of him. There were some struggles as far as just how the team was playing in front of him, as far as, they played some really good teams in past years, like Pittsburgh and Washington, with highly skilled offensive players. And at times, the Jackets just didn't play well defensively in those games and left Bobrovsky out to dry. This year's been a team effort. He's playing well, certainly, and there's been some times where they've had to lean on him. But at the same time, they've just played a much better defensive game through the first 5 games of the playoffs. And it's one of those things now where it's kind of working in concert. And when that's the case, your goaltender is going to look better when the team's playing better in front of him, and sort of vice versa, that if the goaltender's playing well, the team has the confidence to play well in front of him. And so I think it's kind of working together right now, and that's why you're seeing him play a lot better.
It's speaking with Jeff Svoboda, Blue Jackets insider. You can read his stuff at bluejackets.com, NHL.com, and follow him on Twitter at Jackets Insider. Jeff, Riley Nash looked like a man with something to prove. Of course, he was with the Bruins last year, left in free agency to come to Columbus. He had some big hits in last night's game, just at David Krejci. He also comes up with an assist. He's in the right place at the right time. Very possibly would have had a goal if Dubinsky wasn't right there to knock that one home. And had some significant minutes, I think, finished with about 13 minutes. What was your take on his play last night and his play in the postseason this far?
I think he's been a much better player. I don't want to just say in the postseason, but since the middle of the season, he's been a much different player for the Blue Jackets. They brought him in. He was kind of the marquee offseason signing. Came from Boston, where he had played the past two seasons, played a lot of playoff hockey for the Bruins. That's what the Bruins do, is play a lot of playoff hockey. And he came in and was, you know, not signed to be a superstar, but signed to be a solid third or fourth line guy who could play defense, you know, chip in offensively a little bit, and just be a solid all-around player. And it just, he just got off to a terrible start. He was not scoring, but also wasn't really playing defense all that well either, and quickly found himself going from kind of a key penalty killer and the team's number three center to a guy who was, you know, on the fourth line and not playing any special teams. And you know, the team didn't hide from the fact that they signed him to do a lot more than that. But once he got comfortable, he kind of admitted that it was the first 2 or 3 months there was a transition there. There was just kind of figuring out how the Blue Jackets wanted him to play. I think once he got comfortable with that, though, and started playing a better game and got to know his teammates more, that he's, even though he hasn't scored at the rate that he scored last year with Boston when he had, I think it was 15 goals and 41 points, he was at least a guy who was chipping in what they thought they were going to get out of him. And that was through the last probably 3 months of the season. And then what he plays is a playoff-style game. He's a big guy. He's not afraid to hit. He's a strong guy. He can play defense as well, but he's also going to forecheck. He's going to create turnovers. This style of game that you have to play in the postseason is kind of Riley Nash's style of game. And they put him with two other guys who play that style of game, and Brandon Dubinsky and Boone Jenner. And suddenly it's like when you put the right guy in the right situation, it's like it goes a lot better. So that's what I think you're seeing out of Riley Nash a little bit. And there's that obvious storyline with him having played in Boston the last couple of years. He's obviously not focused on that. But I think the fact that he did play in Boston, and like I said, Boston is a team that's used to playing in the postseason. He knows what this game is all about, and that's allowed him to really play well over the last five games and really the last 2 or 3 months.
Now you bring up that line that Riley Nash plays on with Boone Jenner and Brandon Dubinsky. I think they were one of the most impactful lines last night. I mean, the blue-collar way they were kind of playing on the boards. And, of course, they start the spark that leads to the first goal there. But, boy, I mean, they had a huge impact, I thought, on this game.
Yeah, I think they were the best forward line, or at least the most consistent forward line. I mean, those are guys that, you know, as the game becomes playoff-style hockey, this is their time of year. They're guys who are going to play north-south, that are going to hit you. They're going to go behind the opposing team goal line, below the hash marks, as John Tortorella likes to say, and really play a physical, in-your-face style game. And that's what plays this time of year. It was funny throughout the season. Early in the year, it was talk about how the NHL was changing, and it was just becoming so much more an offensive-style game, which is great. I mean, I think we all like to score goals, sure. And there were more goals in the first probably, you know, 3 or 4 months of the season than we've seen in the first 3 or 4 months of the season in quite some time. But a lot of people around the game said, just wait till it gets to March and April, and we'll see it tighten up a little bit. And I think that's what we've seen. And you know, that's just the way it is, because playoff hockey is so intense, and you have to fight for every inch. It's just harder to score goals and harder to find room, and, you know, it gets officiated a little differently. And you can sit here and argue good, bad, or indifferent if that's, you know, exactly what your take is on the fact that it gets officiated a little differently. But you need a little bit more size, need a little bit more gumption, and a little bit more jam, to use a hockey term. And I think that's what that kind of line does, and they did it last night against a team that has that kind of, plays that kind of game, and they took it to them a little bit. So I think the Jackets really were kind of inspired by the way that that line with Dubinsky, Jenner, and Nash played. And if they kind of follow their lead there, that could be a pretty good thing for them going forward.
On the defensive side, Zach Werenski, one of those scary moments last night watching that game. You saw him on the bench, ice being applied to his hand. Turns out he ended up blocking a pretty hard slap shot with his hand. I saw on your Twitter earlier today that he was back at practice. Does it look like he's going to be a go for Saturday?
Yep, he said he's fine. It's just bruised, which, you know, it's going to be that way for a while. Because he said it hit him right in the palm, and if you've ever put on a hockey glove, that's one of the few spots on the body where there is just no protection. The palm of a hockey glove is just a thin little piece of leather, and then it's basically your hand and the stick. That's the only thing between the two. So if you get hit by a slap shot there, it's not good. But he said he's going to be fine. Nothing is broken. So he should be good to go. He also kind of talked about he was the guy who was at fault on the game-winning goal, kind of got caught in between and ended up getting beat backdoor. And he said he was, you know, he's obviously not happy about it, but he's ready to get back out there and see if he can turn things around in game two. So, yeah, Zach Werenski will be good to go. And he's obviously been kind of one of their best players all year and a real engine on that blue line. So they're more than happy to have him.
You give him some tips on stopping the puck. I know you've been, what, three-year, four-year MVP of the Columbus Adult Hockey Leagues down there at Chiller North or East or whatever there is.
I would not describe myself as an MVP, but I would, I put on the gear every once in a while.
Somebody's MVP, Jeff, I'm sure. Special teams last night, a bit of a rough go. I mean, the Blue Jay, I don't think anyone expected them to go 50% again. And as far as it went, they killed all of the power plays for Boston. Unfortunately, they give up the shorthanded goal. Was that addressed in the post game? Is that something the Blue Jackets think, okay, we got to get this fixed?
Well, that was a question of John Tortorella today during the press conferences today, and his response was, well, I'm not going to go into that because he doesn't want to tell us what they did wrong because then Boston will hear it, and they don't want to hear, sure. You know, he doesn't want to give that away. Your typical hockey coach speak as we get down to this time of season, especially Tortorella has been known to kind of get a little tight-lipped as things get more and more intense, although he's been pretty great this year as far as not doing that, but that's just something he didn't want to talk about. Players talked about it a little bit. They basically said that the time off hurt. You know, they were kind of in a real groove and a rhythm on the power play through the first series, and the fact that they didn't play in 9 days really kind of took that away a little bit, but they thought they got better as the game went on. I think once they were in the offensive zone, they had some chances. The biggest problem that they had was just getting the puck up the ice and getting it into the offensive zone. A couple times they had some turnovers at the blue line, some zone entries that just did not work out for them. But I think as the game went on, that got better. You started to see them figure out the way to get the puck into the zone with some speed and set things up. So I think going forward, you know, it's not an alarm bell ringing, but certainly they know, and I think they will be better than they were in game one, because they'll have to be, because, you know, one of the reasons they won that Tampa Bay series was they scored power play goals. And I think, you know, going up against these really good teams that take away the time and space and make it really hard to score, you got to steal some goals on the power play. That's the only way you can win, and the Jackets know that, and they know they have to be better in game two.
The Blue Jackets coming off the game one loss in overtime 3-2. Charlie Coyle scored both the game-tying goal and the game-winning goal. Although in overtime, I think a lot of attention was paid to the stick step, or whatever you'd like to call it. A Brad Marchand on Cam Atkinson. Obviously, this one got a little chippy towards the end. I think Cam spoke a little bit about it earlier today as well, and he's kind of brushing it off as, look, that's just who Brad Marchand is. He does that type of stuff, and I think he wants a little bit of reimbursement, didn't I see?
Yeah, he basically came out today, and of course the media had to ask about that again, because it was one of the more interesting moments of game one, just going ready for a face-off in overtime. Brad Marchand just picks up his leg and stomps it right down on Cam Atkinson's stick, breaking it in half, and if the officials didn't see it, so Cam was lucky that the puck didn't actually drop, or else he would have been out there without a stick, and he came out today and said, you know, asked about it again, and you know, it's not like he brought it up, but he was asked about it and said, yeah, I want $300 for that stick. That's an expensive stick. And, you know, kind of, it was a lot of laughter as that was being said, just because of the fact that, you know, people were like, well, you know, shouldn't that go to the team? And Atkinson's like, no, it's my stick. It's got my name on it. I want the money. He said he's going to, when he sees Marchand on the ice, he's going to ask for it in cash rather than a check or anything like that. So it was a little bit of funny retort, but it does just go to show what Brad Marchand is. Yeah. It's crazy. You know, I can't think of an NHL player over the last however many. There's been some good guys who are
Sean
really
Avery
good players.
Comes to mind, I feel.
Yeah, maybe a guy like that. But even Sean Avery wasn't a 100-point guy in the
NHL.
No,
you're right.
It's weird that, you know, Brad Marchand was one of the top five scorers in the NHL this year, and he's the number one pest in the NHL. Yeah. That's a really hard thing to pull off both of those. Usually the guys who drive the other team crazy are not the guys who are scoring, you know, 36 goals and 100 points in the season. But Brad Marchand is that guy, and it sort of goes hand in hand. His ability to get in under the skin of opposing players kind of is also inspires him to be as good a player as he is. So it's one of those things where you don't necessarily want to get drawn into a war of words or with him, or really get drawn into kind of the antics, because he's the king of the antics. But at the same time, you've got to know he's out there and he's going to do that stuff. I think it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things that I think it gets overblown a little bit because it's just such a unique thing that happened. But at the same time, you know, that's what Brad Marchand's going to do. And you're going to have to be able to handle it, or else you're going to find yourself in a little bit of trouble, because that's just the way the game's going to go. But it certainly has added a little bit of flavor to this series. And I think we saw a lot of hard hits the other night. This is a series that has the potential to be very intense by the end. I think, you know, people in Columbus are going to hate Brad Marchand by the end of it, and people in Boston are going to hate a guy like Josh Anderson for the Blue Jackets, because the way this series is going to be played, there will not be very many friends on either side by the end.
Yeah, after the run-in with R.J. Umberger a few years ago, I don't think there's many Columbus fans who don't already dislike Brad Marchand as that series continues, as you say.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see and hear his name said at least a little bit more. Got to ask you this before we let you go, Jeff. You wrote a cool article about the Monsters, a really cool story. Look, no one thought outside of Columbus, I'd say, Blue Jackets could get past Tampa Bay, and I think as far as the minor league hockey world went, the Syracuse Crunch, Tampa Bay's minor league affiliate, was an 18-point, or I guess you'd say the Blue Jackets, or the Cleveland Monsters, I'll get there eventually, trailed Syracuse by 18 points as far as the standings went. And they came about as close as you could come to sweeping them. So very like minds there between the big league affiliate and the little guys here in Cleveland. A good win. How'd they get it done?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how that worked out. The synergy there where they Cleveland and, you know, Columbus, Tampa Bay, and then it was their two affiliates, Cleveland and Syracuse, in the playoffs. And Cleveland got the 3-1 victory in that series, finished it off last night. One thing that's really impressed me, you know, I grew up, you know, up there in Lorain, and I went to a lot of Cleveland Lumberjacks games back in the day, sure. If anybody remembers them. They were the affiliate of the Penguins back when in the mid-90s when I was a youngster, and I'd go to a lot of those games. And you know, Cleveland has always been sort of a hockey town, not quite to the level as it is a, you know, a baseball town or a football town, or has become a basketball town over the last 20 years. But what's really impressive to me is just the attendance that they've gotten for the Monsters games throughout the year. You would see, you know, 15,000 people there on a Saturday night consistently throughout the year. I thought that was really cool, and they have a team, a fair number of Blue Jackets prospects on that team this year. As the year went on, some of the veterans were really the guys that drove that bus, but you got to see some of the young guys like Alexander Texier, who's now with the Blue Jackets. He went and played in Cleveland, and some of those other guys. Adam Clendenning has played a lot for the Monsters this year and is now playing playoff hockey with Columbus. But what's kind of cool is the way that they won that series is they got it from everybody. Whereas during the season, it was really the veterans that kind of chipped in. They had 11 different guys score in that Syracuse series. Nobody scored more than two goals. It just was a team effort. Everybody got the job done. Liam Foudy, who was the Blue Jackets' first-round pick a year ago, just joined the team for the playoffs when his junior season in Canada finished up. He had two goals last night in the clincher. He's a guy who's probably going to be in Columbus at some point in the relatively near future as well. They got a good group of guys, kind of some veterans. Zach Dolphy played at Ohio State, known him for more than a decade. Great guy, great leader. He's been a really big key for them. Mark Letestu, longtime NHL player playing for the Monsters. So it's kind of cool to see how that synergy is coming together. The young guys and the older guys that are really helping Cleveland make that run and really delighting what's a really good minor league hockey fan base up there.
And hopefully we're going to continue to see long runs by both clubs as we move on. Jeff, as always, appreciate talking to you, man, and thanks for the input.
No problem. Anytime, Dougal.